Merry Christmas, I'm Robin, I'm the lead pastor here, and welcome to Eastlake, we're a church for everyone. We're in a series called The Unexpected Christmas, and we're simply looking at who Jesus is, and what is it that Jesus does. The first Christmas happened 2,000 years ago, and it starts with an almost family. A man named Joseph picks out someone, and he likes her, and she likes him, and they're on their way to get engaged, and they finally get engaged, and now they're going to get married soon. And then all of a sudden, this woman, this girl, the object of his whole life, ends up pregnant. And Joseph knows, I'm not the father. And so you can imagine the sparks fly, and how come, and what did you do? And this woman's name is Mary. And she has this, sort of amazing story that the whole thing is God's idea and it's not her fault. And she's still a virgin. And Joseph listens and he just can't buy any of the story. So he does what a lot of guys would do, what most of us would do. He says, well, I like you and everything, but I'm not going to marry you. So he plans, he's going to break off the engagement. He's not going to get married to her. And she's just about ready to become a single mom. Now, Christmas hasn't happened yet, just about ready. And God intervenes and goes to Joseph and says, Joseph, it's all true. And he's able to convince him to stay with Mary. And think about Joseph now. You know, he just wants to have a quiet little family. That's just his idea, quiet little family, I'm going to raise my family. And all of a sudden, he's going to be stepdad to the Savior of the world. And so that's Joseph. Now, you fast forward a little bit, and they're in the little town of Bethlehem. And they're just traveling through, And as they're traveling through, Mary's way, way pregnant. She's way, way pregnant. And, you know, the doctor said you're going to have your baby on January 2nd. But a lot of times the baby has other plans. And here comes the baby. They're in Bethlehem. They have no cradle. They have no blankets, no bottles. It's very unexpected. They're not ready. And here comes the baby. And it says in the Bible there's no place for them to catch a room. They don't know where to stay. Very, very unexpected. And can you imagine? I mean, I know, like when we see the little manger scenes now, you know, and we see the little figures, and they're all so cute, and there's, you know, Jesus, you know, the little baby Jesus, white, blue-eyed with blonde hair, like all children from the Middle East look just like that, and you know, and it's so clean and everything, and with nativity set, and we think, well, that's the way the Christmas was, but that how it isn't. They were scared. They're on the road. They're not home. They're not around friends and family. They're overwhelmed. It's like, I'm not expecting this. We're not ready for this. And isn't that, Christmas can still be like that now. I have all my plans together. I'm preparing for things. And all of a sudden, you start to get overwhelmed. And it's not going like you want it to. And there they are right there. And there's this great story about the shepherds. We've all seen probably some little play in elementary school. Like, how did the shepherds get in the Christmas story? Here's how the shepherds get in the Christmas story. Because God needs to remind Mary and Joseph, hey, the whole thing is my idea. I'm with you. And so I'm going to read this to you. It's going to come up on the screens. It's not in your notes. But here's what happens. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. So these are good dudes. They know that the enemy and attack people, bad guys, always come at night. So they're watching over the flocks, making sure they're okay. And so they're out there at night. And an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone all around them. And they were terrified. Well, of course they were. It's like, what the heck? Is it a meteorite? What's going on here? And they're scared. And they're going to protect the sheep. It's like, I don't know. So they're scared now. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid. And isn't it amazing? Before you can listen, oftentimes in life, you somehow have to break through the fear. Because when I'm scared, I just listen so differently. Or maybe I can't even hear at all when I'm scared. And so God's like really good about it. He says, oh, settle down. It's going to be okay. And I hope today, if you came today with some kind of fear, this one thing could happen. God could just settle you down. Maybe it's the bills. Maybe it's Christmas. Maybe you're afraid because you have to see your in-laws again. Whatever it is, if something's coming, it's scaring you. I hope God can get a hold of you today and say, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. But he tells them, don't be afraid. But the angel said to them, don't be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all people. Awesome. We call this a church for everyone, for all people. Anyone can come. All people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. And I know the nativity scenes always look clean and everything, but like this is stinky old straw and they're outside in the cold and this is not like, you know, 4-star accommodations. This is like they're in a barn. And the shepherds show up. And when I've discovered this about God, and hopefully when everything is going so differently than you planned, God will figure out some way to remind me that he's with me. He goes to these shepherds here. And the shepherds are the outsiders, by the way. They're not even allowed at church because they work with animals, so they're outsiders. Nobody likes them. Think of the carnies of our day, the people who work in the carnivals. That's the shepherds. And God, he comes to them. He says, I'm going to send the shepherds. Everybody will be blown away if I send them. And so they arrive, and they just have a simple message. Mary, Joseph, God has not forgotten you. And God will always find a way to get the message across to me that I'm not alone, that he's with me, that he has not forgotten me. And the shepherds go on. Here's the story. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning that all had been told to them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. So Mary sees it all. And there's the one lesson that she learns. When I'm overwhelmed and I'm alone, God is with me. He hasn't forgotten me. And because of that, all the worries can turn to joy. And it's exactly what I'm hoping for us today. Now, the big idea this weekend, look in your notes, Christmas means everyone can have joy. And just as a side note, just mark it somewhere, joy and happiness feel the same. So they're the same type of things. They're emotions. They feel, but they can come from different places. Happiness is tied to something. Joy is tied to someone. Okay, so happiness and joy, they feel the same, but happiness is tied to something, and things change. But joy is tied to someone. And we're going to look at a story today about this exact same family, but it happens 30 years later when Jesus is a man. It's an interesting story. Mary's in the exact same situation, learning again this right here, that joy happens because it's tied to someone, and everyone can have it. So it's in your notes, and we're going to read through it. And then we'll talk a bit about. So here it is. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time's not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used for Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out, take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you have saved the best till now." This was the first of the miraculous signs Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days. Jesus is 30 years old, so he's been in this family for a long, long time. He has brothers and sisters, Mary and Joseph, and he's at this wedding. And there's a catastrophe because the wine runs out. It's a catastrophe when the beer runs out on Sunday when the guys are over and you're watching the football game. That's a bad thing. The kegger runs dry. Maybe you've been one of those where they have a kegger. I wouldn't know, but some people have told me about it, but I may have been once in my life. Anyways, the kegger runs out, and oh, that's a really, really bad thing. But when the wine ran out in this culture, this was ginormous because weddings were the biggest thing that ever happened in a family's life. They saved and 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 they saved all their money because when the wedding happened, they threw this mother of all parties, and the most important thing at the party was the wine. It wasn't the food, it wasn't the guests, it wasn't the dancing, it wasn't the entertainment, it was the wine. And here's why. Because wine in this culture symbolizes joy. And when you had plenty of wine and everybody got wine, what you were saying as a family was, this couple's going to have a joyous life. They're going to be happy. And when the wine ran out, it was like jinxing them. They're never going to make it. You ever seen a couple and people talk behind their back, "Yeah, right, no match. They're never going to make it. Not even close." And when the wine runs out, everybody would start whispering, "Oh, there's no more wine. They're going to have a crappy marriage." And so you saved and you saved and you saved. And if there's one thing you make sure is the wine does not run out, and it runs out. And sometimes in life, the wine runs out. mean, you plan and you plan and you plan and you prepare, you do everything you possibly can in life, and the wine runs out. It just is gone. You're like, how did that happen? We planned for this. We saved for this. How did I get demoted? How did I lose my job? How did the freaking transmission go out on my car? How did this happen? Not at Christmas time. But it still does. The wine runs out. And it's important stuff. It's like, I have presents to buy. I don't need a bill right now. And Mary's here too. Now, when you're older, some of you guys will go through this, when you're older and you go to places where your kids are, a lot of times they avoid you in public. They don't want to be by you. They don't like how you're dressed or something, whatever it is. So you'll notice when you're little, they're always around you all the time. You know, I need money, I want to ride, all these things. But when you get older, a lot of times they'll be with their friends over at a completely different part of the wedding, not even by you. They're like, do you know them over there? No, I don't know them. Someone said they were my parents once. They don't come around you. And so Mary seems to be by herself, and she somehow sees that there's no more wine. Do you have anybody in your life that when you have a problem, it just sort of automatically becomes their problem too because they love you and care so much? You know, maybe you're like that. Somebody has a problem, and it's like you see the problem, and you think about the problem, and all of a sudden you're kind of getting like drawn to the problem, and the next thing you know, you're worried as much as they are, and it's like your problem now. You have anybody like that in your life? It's like when they get a problem, it's your problem. And I mean in a healthy way, because you hurt and you love them, and that's Mary. Maybe she knows them. I don't know what happened. Someone drank too much. I don't know what's, but she's like, oh no, this is going to be so embarrassing. This couple's never going to leave this down. This is going to be terrible for them. So she goes to her son, and she says that they don't have enough wine. It says, when Jesus was in Galilee, there was, what are we at here? Oh, there we go. I was reading like backwards there. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana of Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, listen to this now, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. So she does, and here's the lesson, what we can all do with problems. She takes the problem to Jesus. And that's like point number one, just write in your margins. When you have a problem, you can take the problem to Jesus. So whatever's occurring, let's keep reading. And Jesus says, woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. So stop right there. So this is for all the moms in the room that have a son that has said, clean up your room, take your bicycle and put it in the garage, feed the dog, take out the trash, you know, pick up your toys out of the living room. For all the moms that have ever said that to your sons, and then your sons act like they did not hear you at all. They're just like, you know, and you just say to your sons, like, this is what I need you to do. Moms know this. There's a special relationship, moms and sons. This is what I need you to do right now. And they're just like, I don't even hear you at all. Or they're like this. They're like this. They're like, Mom! We're getting to get a glimpse of Jesus' relationship with his mother because he's a human being. He has a relationship. And his mom's probably done this a million times. Jesus, this is what I need you to do. He's like, Mom, not now. And she does what all moms do. It's so perfect. She goes, don't but mom me. Now I said, it's like she lets it go in one ear and out the other. And she just said, like, and here's Mary now. Catch this, read this. It says, his mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. So here's Mary. She gets the, so there must have been like a party here where there's people walking around with little trays, servers with like little meatballs on them or something. They're walking around like this, and she gathers a bunch of them up and says, come with me. We have a problem here. We're going to take our problem to Jesus. And so she gets the servers there because she expects Jesus to do something for her when she has a problem. Do you? What are you expecting when you approach Jesus with a problem? Are you expecting him to help you or expect him to say, whoa, wait a minute now. This isn't my problem. Don't you understand you've made some bad choices? Or maybe you lived on this proverb. This is the one in my home when I grew up. God helps those that help themselves. So a lot of times in life we're like, well, that'd be great if I could help myself, but I can't help myself because I have a problem. Mary seems to expect Jesus to help. She brings the servants. She gets them together and says, this is going to be great. You can check this out. And she brings the servants with her because she expects Jesus to help her. Do you? Maybe you expect a lecture instead. Whoa, before we give any help, sit down. We got a lot of talking to do. Maybe you expect him to guilt trip you. Or maybe you just expect him to say you don't deserve it. Or maybe you never approach Jesus, hardly ever. I mean, when is the last time you went to Jesus with a problem because your expectations is he's not going to do anything about it? Here's Mary, though. She's got this problem. It's not even her problem. I mean, she's worried. She feels alone. She probably has all the emotions. And if you notice that, when you embrace someone else's problem, now all of a sudden you have all the emotions that they have. They have a really problem. Now you're scared and you're worried and you feel overwhelmed and you feel alone. And so there's Mary. She's got all these things now. Wait a minute. I remember now. I'm not alone. Jesus is here. He's been ignoring me all night. Come on, his mother. But I know he's here. So she gets these servers, and she goes over, and she sees Jesus. And he's like, Mom. And she's like, and she tells the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. And she knows something that we all need to learn. I guess Jesus could have said to her, Mom, listen, man, this is not my problem. I was not in charge of wine. If I was, I would have had ample supply. When's the last time you approached somebody with a problem and before it even began, they stopped and said, whoa, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Jesus could have done that, but he doesn't. And she knows something, and it's something that we all can learn. This is such an awesome thing. From God's perspective, my problems are his problems. Now listen, catch that. From the perspective of Jesus, your problems are his problems. So whatever problems you have right now, Jesus feels like they're his problems. See, Mary knows that. So she gets the servants all together. She gets all the services. Come with me. This is going to be awesome. So he says, do whatever he tells you. Circle that because that'll come up later. Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. And so here's what these are now. And this is interesting because now Jesus is full on. He's got his attention. Okay, Mom, I'm going to help you. And he starts teaching. He's always like this. He looks over and he sees these big containers. They've all got 20 or 30 gallons of water in them. And these are the containers of water that they use to wash the dishes. So this is dish water now. So it's not going to just be a miracle with Perrier water, nice clean water. This is dish water. People got their hands in there. There's crap floating around. And this is dish water stuff that Jesus is going to use. Do you have a time in your life ever where you say to yourself, I don't bring enough to the table when it comes to asking Jesus to help me? I don't have enough to offer. And he's so smart, he goes, oh man, I'm going to use it. It's like it's his way of saying to everyone can have joy, because time to time we say to ourselves, I don't have enough to offer Jesus. One of the most unexpected heroes I've ever had in my life was a fifth grader named James Buckmaster. James Buckmaster was my friend Capone, my son's friend Capone had this kid, James Buckmaster, and they were friends, and they're in the fifth grade. And my son and I decided we're going to start a basketball team. We called it the Heat. And this, we didn't play like the Heat, though. We'd never won one game the whole year, but that's something I'm still wounded by, so we'll put it over there. But we had a basketball team. He wants to invite all his friends onto the team, so he invites all his friends on the team. Most of them can't even play basketball, especially James Buckmaster. And everybody loved James Buckmaster, but he had the skinniest white legs that hung out of his shorts like breadsticks. I mean, this kid, he couldn't catch, he couldn't run, he couldn't do anything. And James Buckmaster wants to be on the basketball team. And so we let him on the basketball team, and practice after practice, I'm trying to get Buckmaster involved and everything. And this was my routine in this basketball thing that we did. At the end of every practice, I would run the team, wind sprints, run, 15 minutes, solid running, run. Every time I wanted to leave, going, whoa, this is a lot of work. Run, you know, I'm hoping most of them will quit, get some better players, but they never did. So anyways, so run them. And so run. And so one time at the end of practice, I announced to everybody, we don't have to run today if one kid can make a free throw. Everybody said, yeah, right on, you know, now you have to run. And I yelled out, I don't know why I did this. It was just like the craziest thing. James Buckmaster. And everybody's like, Buck? And you should have seen Buckmaster's face. We called him Buck. I said, James Buckmaster. And he's like, yeah, we don't have to run. Me? old buck goes up to the free throw line. He gets the ball. I don't think he'd ever hit the rim ever in his life. And he has the ball, and he's like holding it like this. He doesn't even know enough he's supposed to bounce it. He's just holding it like this. He's looking like this. I thought he was going to pee his pants. And he's like this, and everybody's around him. They're really quiet, and they're starting to encourage him. Come on, Buckmaster. Come on, Buck. Come on, James. You can do it. And he lets it fly. And when he first let it go, I'm thinking to myself, this is going to go over the backboard. And it flies up there, and I mean, it goes up and swish, right down. It's perfectly quiet for a second, and then the entire place erupts. Buckmaster! They're yelling and screaming. And James is walking around like, I'm number one, his bell's off number one, like this, you know. And in that moment, it was so unexpected. And of all the things that I remember from that season, I mean, they're all gone now. Except for that, like, one, that one moment with Buckmaster. I mean, of all the kids that you thought could never bring enough to the table, yeah, he ended up being the hero. And do you know, oftentimes it's the dishwater in our life that Jesus uses it, because when he does, we never forget it. I mean, everything from that season is long gone now, but I will never forget Buckmaster dancing around with one finger in the air like he had just won the NCAA championship. Because when God chooses the things in our life that are like the dishwasher, the stuff that, oh, that could never be anything, we never forget it, and we never forget who did it. And so Jesus has a plan now, and he says, there it is over there. He says to the servants, fill the jars with water, so they filled them to the brim. Now, can you imagine being one of the servers? You've just been around little meatballs. You're not even asking for any of this. And Mary says, come on, come on, come on, come on over here. We don't have any more wine. You're probably thinking Jesus is going to buy wine. And then he says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go over and fill up the water where the dishwater is. And I'm sure the servants were like, what? And then he says, and then he told them, now draw some and take it to the master of the banquet. They're probably thinking, yeah, right, Jesus, I want to lose my job. Right, I'd like to be fired by having my boss drink dishwater water. I mean, how would you have responded? God ever ask you to do anything that just seems a little crazy? Go over and get some dishwater, and then some good things are going to happen. That's when God comes to you in the areas of your life that you're not proud in, and you're scared, and you're embarrassed by, and you want to keep them locked away as a secret. He says, now I want to do something with that area of your life. You're like, do not go there, God. No. I'm amazed they even obeyed. Mary says, go get the dishwater. You know, go do it. Do whatever he says. And somehow they do. They start walking over there, and something must have happened in this short walk, wherever it was, because they're here thinking, what in the world? And by the time they get over there, they say to fill them to the brim. Now catch it, it's a story about faith. Faith is a process, because they start over here, what? And they're over here like, fill it to the brim. One guy must have thought, you know, because here's the thing, faith always comes after I take a step. See, in my life, I want Jesus to turn the water into the wine first. Then I'll take a step. Jesus, turn it into wine, let me taste it, put it under a microscope, have a specialist come in and say that it's good wine, then I'll take it over to the master. That's how I like to live. But that's not faith. Faith is taking the step because Jesus said so. So, and here's the thing, once you take the step, your faith starts to grow. One guy probably is walking over there and they're filling it up, they're grumbling, one guy's like, shh, quiet now. Fill a little higher, man. If he's going to make this into wine, let's get as much as we can. Because his faith is growing. See, faith always comes after I take the step, not before. Now, what's happening in your life and you want it to occur, you're looking for the joy, but you're over here and you think, just go ahead and do it, Jesus, and then I'll do it. Go ahead, go, Jesus, turn it into wine, then I'll take my step. Mm-mm. Faith comes after I take the step. Let's keep reading. So it goes on in the story. So they did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Imagine what they're thinking now, the look on their face now when it's happening. There is a reward when you take a step, and faith is the reward. They're probably going, I knew that was going to happen. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you saved the best till now. This gives me a chance just to take a shot at my philosophy about drinking. The Bible does not teach that you can't drink. Does not teach that. It teaches that you can drink, and you drink within boundaries. So if you like a cold beer, I like a cold beer. I probably even like a warm beer sometimes if that's all I can get. I mean, you know, I like that, but I drink within boundaries. Because that's what the Bible teaches. Because, what does it say here? You can be tricked if you drink too much. It's possible to drink too much. And some people made a lot of mistakes drinking too much, and so they tell everybody else they can't drink at all. Or some people are afraid of alcohol, and maybe they should be. But what the Bible says is to drink within boundaries. And if you can't stay within the boundaries, then don't drink. Why? And where's the line? My judgment's impaired. That's what this story says. It says they can be tricked. They can be tricked into thinking something that isn't true. And I have lots of experience with alcohol. My mom was an alcoholic. I was raised in an alcoholic's home, and I saw lots of things where people thought that what they were doing was absolutely okay, and their judgment was impaired. So this is just a little commercial for drinking. The Bible says you can drink. It's a lot of good things to drink, but drink within the boundaries. And so he says that. He goes, everybody tries to trick him after they've drank too much. But you've saved, interesting how he phrases this, but you've saved the best till now. And here's what he's saying, perfect timing. And do you know part of following Jesus is letting him decide when now is supposed to be? Because that's something I like to decide when now should come. Because I feel like I'm waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. It's just way too long. Jesus, I need it now. Or the Lord will come to me and say, you know, you really should not have treated this person. You need to go ask them forgiveness. And I'm like, now? And being with Jesus is letting him determine when now is. Because we live in a consumer society, let's face it. For us, it's always now, 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 now. Use it up, use it up, use it up. Now, 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 now. And you get so much right now, I want it right now, that stuff's just sort of like, you don't even appreciate. I have this job, my day job, pastor all the time, day job. I'm a salesman. And so when I first went to work there, I didn't realize that on Fridays, they gave you cash on Fridays for things that you sold. I didn't know this. So you come into a sales meeting on Friday, they call your name, and they give you cash, cold cash, you know, $180. First time I was there, it was like $225. I was like, dang, this is a great place to work. This is awesome. The next week, they come in, they call it spiffs. You know, Robin, they come up here, you know, 130, you know, the next time they come up, they get 206. One time I got $300 on a Friday. It's like, I work at the greatest place ever, you know, and I'm getting money, everything's good. Have you ever had anything in your life that is so fantastic, it's awesome, and then the more you get it, it starts to lose its shine? A few months ago, I got like $85 on a Friday, and I caught my going, $85. I light my cigars with $85. You know, I started off so excited. That's why we have to let Jesus control now. And we can't control it. Because if we cook, like, we'll take everything and we'll never be satisfied. We'll never be settled. We'll never be appreciative. Because now, I want it right now. And in this story, he's amazed. He goes, what perfect timing. You really know how to. What is it you're waiting and waiting and waiting for? You're starting to get angry. Can you let God control now? What is Jesus telling you to do right now? You're like, now at Christmas time? I have to see them and talk. Can you let him control now? He has perfect timing. Now the story continues and it's almost over. This is the first of the miraculous signs Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and the disciples put their faith in him, and they go down to Capernaum with his family, and that's what's happening. And it says that there's a sign here, and all miracles are a sign. When God does things, they're a sign. And you know signs, they tell us where to go and how to live and what to do things. And this is the sign that in life, the wine wears out. It goes away. You don't have anymore. It runs out. And when it does, you can turn to Jesus, because the wine will always run out. The love will run out of a marriage. The patience will run out of parenting those kids. The money will run out before the presents are purchased. The wine always runs out somewhere. And the sign is that when I'm overwhelmed and alone, I'm not alone. That I have Jesus, and He can do something about it. That's the sign. This is like a sign today, to be here today. It's a sign for some, I hope, today, regardless of where you are, that the sign is, you're not alone. The shepherds were a sign at the very, very first Christmas. They were a sign to these young couple. They're scared to death. They're living this scandalous story, sharing a bed with a bunch of stinky animals. And the shepherds show up as a sign. You're not alone. I'm with you. Mary, all these years later, there's a big problem. I'm hurting for these people. Who's going to do something about it? We don't have money. The state liquor store is closed. We can't buy anymore. Go to Jesus, because you're not alone. Now here's a point of application. We're almost done. Number one, write in, what step does Jesus want you to take? Remember now, what the servants did, they put their trays of meatballs down. Jesus says, go over and do this. Mary said, do whatever He says. Okay, go over to the dishwater. What's in your life like dishwater? And Jesus has told you to do it, and you haven't taken a step, and you're like, come on, Jesus, just turn it into wine from here. You know, the wine comes after you take the step. What step is Jesus asking you to take? Listen now, you know what He's told you to do. There's no more faith coming. You're not going to get more courageous. It is not going to become any easier. That all comes after you take a step. And it's when the wine arrives. We're pretty new out in West Valley, new church, and we're trying to find a place to meet. We're meeting somewhere where people didn't really want to come there, and it was just hard to meet, and we're praying, and we're praying this one day. We came out to a location. One of the ways we ended up here is just the still, small voice. Go check on that building again. And we just took a step. And that's how we arrived. What step is Jesus asking you to take? And you're waiting for something to occur, and it's not going to. And maybe the reason is because you're not taking a step because you're looking over at dishwater, and you're saying, how's He going to make anything out of that? Or that could never taste good. I don't want that kind of life. That's not, you know, all those sentences. The wine comes after you take your step. Now, the second thing is write in, what sign has Jesus shown you? You're driving down the road. You need an exit sign, the sign to tell you how fast to go. Where do I stand in line to get my cheeseburger? Signs, 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 signs. My friend Dave, he ignored a really big sign one time. He's on vacation. The entire time he's been on vacation, he has it all planned out. He bought a cigar. He has it all planned out. One of the nights when the kids have gone to bed, it's going to be his time. He's going to, in the hotel, he's going to go down outside into the jacuzzi, and he's going to turn it on. He's going to smoke his cigar. The night finally arrives. He's been Mr. Dad, Mr. Dad, Mr. Mom, Mr. Dad. This is my time now, me and my cigar. So he gets his cigar. He goes down there. He approaches the jacuzzi, and there's a sign there that says temporarily closed. He looks at his cigar, and the sign says for everybody else, but not for me. Turns on the bubbles, jumps into the jacuzzi, smoking his cigar, living large, just great. And some guy comes coming out with a mop and a bucket and a hose. He's all disheveled. He comes out and says, what are you doing in the hot tub, man? Dave says, smoking a cigar. He goes, some guy had diarrhea in there an hour ago. Dave's in the poop soup. Because he did not pay attention to the sign. Is there any signs that Jesus is showing you and maybe is starting to smell a little bit? Because you're ignoring the sign. And yet He's put it there for your own benefit. And maybe you're like me, and I'll just play my cards up front. There's a lot of things in life that I just say to myself, well, that applies to everyone but me. Because I do things the way I do things. And man, you can cause a lot of suffering for yourself and other people. Are there any signs that Jesus is showing you? And they're very, very, very clear. as clear as the shepherd. Now here's the bottom line today. Happiness is tied to circumstances. Joy is tied to Jesus. And that's the whole Christmas message. Now on Tuesday night, we're going to have a candlelight service right in here. I hope you come back. I hope you invite your friends. We're trying something different. We haven't tried it. It was the first time we'll try one, a candlelight service. It should be pretty cool. Everybody's going to get a candle. We'll see if we can burn the place down. But anyways, we're going to have candles. We're going to talk about how Jesus is the light of the world and how that all looks. And then the next Sunday, we don't have church. So at Eastlake, there's one Sunday a year that we don't have church. All the volunteers get it off. We hang out with our families. So that's next Sunday. So if you come here next Sunday, have a good time at church because we won't be here. But Tuesday night, we'll all be here. We'll all be here. And it's kind of how we cap off Christmas, because what we're trying to figure out is who Jesus is. And what does he do? And here's who Jesus is. He's the one that makes it possible for me to have joy and you to have joy regardless of my circumstances, even when the wine runs out, even with all I have to offer him. The only thing I bring to the table is dishwater. I can still have joy. Because listen now, joy is tied to someone, and that someone is Jesus. And your problems are his problems.